This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Dante's Peak was just named the best, well, the second best place to live in the United States. Population under 20,000.
Good for you. What was number one?
I don't know. Some piece of crap town out in Montana. Who cares?
I'll be seeing you.
So how was dinner last night, Harry?
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello and welcome to FilmSack, everybody. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 443. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian. I think I smell a young naked couple boiling Dunaway.
Stew. Oh, hi.
Hi.
Come on, Ruth. This is your best dog pal, Ruffy, barking and freaking out because you just got to open that door. Let me lead you down this mountain to safety. I mean, come on, Ruth. What do you want? Do you want to take a lava bath, Ruth? Well, old Ruffy here has plenty of life left to live. Too much life to tread molten hot lava death. Now open the freaking door, you stubborn old lady. Listen, someone is here. Oh, good, it's the grandkids. They'll talk some sense into you, Ruth. And then I can lead you all down the mountain to safety. Door's open. Enough talk. Follow me. Ruffy. Don't worry, fam. I gotcha. I know a path down the mountain that leads straight out of town. Oh, man, did you guys see what happened to those Twonset Hot Springs lovers? Burnt bubble butts up in the air without a care in the world. Well, I guess that's one way to go. Right, fam? Fam? Ruh-roh, Ruffy. Okay, Ruffy, I guess it's just me against this mountain. One long dog and a journey to freedom. Woo! Lava flow! Up! Let's see if I can get better look at things from up here on this rock. Oh, good. There is the volcanologist. That's how you say that. Volcanologist with the great hair and carefree willingness to drive through anything, no matter what the insurance cost. He really is quite dreamy, though. And jump! Hey, fam, have you seen Ruth? Wait. What smells like burnt up old lady legs? Oh, I guess that closes the chapter on that part of my life. Say, would you guys do me a favor and not tie me up until we get out of here? Ruffy thanks ya. Hey, is that coffee? Coffee. That was special delivery for someone.
There's a reason people write in and tell us that your intros are their favorites. There's a reason.
Oh, well, they're definitely offbeat.
You're an insane person, and they come out amazing, so keep that up.
Thank you.
Also with us, Randy, keep your feet up, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hi.
Randy.
Now, I don't want to alarm you, but I literally want to alarm you in, so far as what I'm about to say will cause everyone to take emergency action. Something is about to happen here that, while we can't say anything with scientific certainty, we're going to do science that tells us that our uncertainty is certain to lead us to a conclusion. See, Anytime there's a place where one incredibly attractive woman happens to be single and available, and she has a modicum of power and authority in the area, we have no choice but to bring in James Bond to determine with great accuracy this whole thing is going to blow.
This is so true. And by the way, this was the same year his second Bond movie came out, I think. Or first, maybe.
Oh, really? Yeah. I thought this came after all of his Bonds, but no, huh?
97, so can't remember which one it was. Everything Lives Forever, or don't nobody
Everything
dies first.
Lives Forever.
Whatever it is. I don't
this
know.
This whole thing is going to blow.
You're not wrong, by the way, about the blow. That means multiple things in this case. Also with us, and finally, Brian, when he asked for the compact truck model, this is not what he had in mind, Ibbot.
I know. It's totally true. Mm-hmm. All right, everybody, here we go. Row, row, row your boat gently row, around the fountain.
Boat,
no. Oh. No,
don't
you're
do
miss,
rounds.
You're going to miss
don't
you're
do rounds.
Say, you're not going to know what my lyrics. Gently around the fountain, we're detecting a lot of seismic activity.
Ruth, get off the mountain.
Right?
Gently down the lock. Ruth, so help me, get your butt out of that cabin and get the hell in the truck. Row, row, row your boat gently across the lake. Ruth, what the hell are you doing? Get back in the boat. The water is acid, for freak's sake. Row, row, row. Watch out for the helicopter. Thankfully, I swerved. In case you're wondering what happened to Ruth, she got what she deserved.
Yes, she did. That's what happened.
That was amazing.
I had to struggle to not also make my intro about Ruth. Like, it was amazing. It is so entirely the thing that captures your imagination in this film. Everything about it, everything about the movie is paint by numbers, small action, except this one old lady that you just can't help but wonder everything about. How did she get to be in this situation in the first place? How did she come to be kind of nice but kind of a dick? Like, all of the this, so much I want to know about this woman.
Yeah, the background of Ruth is a mystery, really.
No, I mean, when you look at the other movie, Volcano, that's a movie about man versus nature. Dante's Peak is a movie about man versus Ruth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ruth, right, pretty much.
Ruth is a pain in the ass in every possible way. And then I know the whole idea. I mean, I know what they're doing. They're saying, okay, well, she is a pain in the ass. And here we go, the whole movie with her being part of the problem. And then she's does a heroic thing at the end that sort of makes up for all of it. But in my mind, it wasn't heroic enough, because now it just meant you got to carry grandma around like burnt meat.
Right.
Like,
and really, you know, momentum would have taken them to the dock. They would have been fine. She really didn't pull the boat along that far. Like, they.
Well, you know, Ruth. So Dante's. Do you guys like read the epic poem Dante's Inferno?
Dante's Inferno.
I mean, a lot of this stuff is on the nose with you know, sin and how you gotta, you know, they're kind of like in purgatory, or he's in purgatory and he's trying to save people. There's a lot of elements that are there, and of course she dies from her own arrogance and pride, really.
Yeah.
And so she tries to redeem herself in
there
the
is
end.
Some of that, but I started looking at like modern translations of Divine Comedy, and I'm like, I'm gonna find the all of the things. No, actually, these are just lazy tropes that happen in movies. Seriously. Yeah.
Somewhat.
They try to be allegorical with this a little bit, and it's I don't think they do a very good job of it, but they I can feel the attempt. Certainly the most obvious and overt attempt is the name. You know, given the mountain the name
there,
Dante's
there,
Peak.
There are some things. Like you can go through the naked people who are probably, you can tell yourself they're having an affair, right? And a lot of people who get hurt in this movie get hurt because they didn't listen, or because they didn't prepare, or
did
you know, like
faith.
Right. There's a lot of stuff there, but it's really a bunch of lazy movie tropes. Like, it's not like some of them are so freaking common in disaster movies, you know, that it's like.
But going back for Ruth is basically going back for the dog, or going back for the cat in Alien, or, you know, stuff like that. But the cat didn't make half the crew have to go all the way back through the ship.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, this we do talk about, okay, so this is our, How many disaster movies have we watched besides?
Oh, I would love to know that number. I was thinking about that last night, so it's funny you should ask, but it's got to be in like the
couple
disaster
dozen,
movies.
Right?
Yeah. 24, 25,
you know.
Yeah.
Right. Disaster movies are kind of like horror movies. You want the tropes. That's the reason why I like horror movies, because they're comfortable to me. I like the predictability, but for some reason, I always yell at the screen, and I'm yelling at the screen at this disaster movie, which is exactly what I want in a disaster movie. I don't want a smart disaster movie. I don't want that. I'm not going to be smart when there's a disaster going on. I'm going to be dumb as dirt.
Yeah, you kind of do want that, and that's partly why I'm not a giant fan of disaster movies, because I think you're actually right, but I don't love that. I wish people were better prepared, smarter about it. I don't know.
Well, it's lazy, much of a disaster movie, would it?
Right.
But it's lazy to say, all right, we need something to cause some tension. I know they have to go back for somebody. And it just feels like it's a really lazy way of writing a trope into a movie, where you got to come up with, we need to figure out some way to get this bomb into the volcano to implode it so that it doesn't explode. It's like, I mean, obviously making some crap up, but at least, you know, having a reason like that to go back up the mountain would be better than old lady up there and now the kids
volcano,
are up there.
Volcano has a little bit better at this than Dante's Peak, but
a lot
but
better
to me is,
in my opinion.
But to me it's inferior when it comes to the fun, because I never yell at Volcano. I just go, oh, okay,
this is where I want to differ. With the best disaster movies are things like Twister and Armageddon that find a sense of humor throughout the movie. That, now I'm not talking about basically comedic disaster movies, right? So like the other end of the spectrum is when a movie like Sharknado and its five sequels, you know what I mean? Is basically a dark comedy, like Snakes on a Plane kind of walks this line.
Yeah.
But like when a movie is serious about the subject, like Armageddon, but then there's just times where you're like laughing out loud because they've done something really comedic. That's the essence. That's the best disaster movie stuff for me. Dante's Peak never does that. It has such a cast of characters and all these scientists who come to town, and they, other than yelling about coffee, there's just not a joke there, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I didn't want a joke. I didn't want that. I like the somberness of it.
Yeah,
did you guys ever see? Did you ever see the Poseidon?
Yes,
adventure.
Yes.
So I mean,
the original, or wasn't there a remake?
Either or both. Yeah, the remake is actually on Netflix, and I would love to watch that.
So we didn't do that. We didn't do that, did we? Poseidon.
Pretty sure we didn't do that one.
Okay, I could have sworn we did the classic one, but
I don't remember us seeing any boat sinking movies. Have we seen boat sinking?
We saw the Ghost. Didn't we see the original?
Ghost boat.
Ghost
what was
boat,
that?
Ghost ship. Yeah, ghost what ship. Was that called? Ghost ship. Ghost that was boat. It. Yeah, ghost boat. Yeah, that's as close as we've gotten to a haunted boat, or a sinking boat. But yeah, I don't think we've done either of those.
Wow.
And we should, because they're deserving to be on there. But here's the thing: of all disaster movies, and I think Titanic is one you'd include. My favorite, by far, Randy mentioned, and it's Twister. Twister's an amazing disaster film. Yeah. And I think it's the best at like.
It's an amazing disaster. I don't think you could have said that any better.
It's a good disaster movie, and I think it's got good acting. It's got really good direction. Has amazing cinematography. The effects at the time are really strong, and it gets to the point right away. You're not waiting until half the movie to have your disaster. You're sort of chasing these disasters throughout, and then you just get the big one. And it kept me so. I just loved Twister in the day.
Twister was,
and I want to see Twister again.
I saw Twister in the THX theater.
Oh,
and
wow.
It blew me away, sucked me up, and blew me away. It was awesome.
But it's a good point though about Twister and movies that are good like it. They do know when the humor is supposed to work and when you're supposed to inject it, and when you shouldn't. And that movie was really good at it. This one was humorless. There's just nothing fun is going on. It's just
I enjoyed Ruth. I enjoyed every.
You didn't
bit
really
of that
enjoy Ruth.
I enjoyed the antagonistic way that Ruth just wrecked everything. She was the real disaster in this movie, and I enjoyed that. I didn't need a lot of comedy. I think that actually would have taken away, because this, I don't know. There's something that works for the humorlessness in this movie, and I think. Mm-hmm. Our lead actors, and they're really good at playing these kind of, you know, down and out kind of acting.
Right.
Like they're just a little bit, like they're a little bit sad.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I just thought of another one I really liked. I like that Marky Mark one where the, it was the based on a real story.
Transformers?
No, the blue.
What a disaster movie.
The Happening?
The British Petroleum one. I can never remember the name of the damn thing.
Yeah, yeah. The what was that one?
Oh,
Deepwater Horizon. Yeah, I thought was
Deepwater Horizon.
I thought that was great. So, and that was a humorless experience. There was not a lot of humor in that thing.
Yeah,
there lots of action.
They were depicting real people who really died. And so, like, you have to.
Yeah, there's an extra, you're right, that's an extra, like, level of something there, yeah. But
Dante's Peak makes a decision right out of the gate, and that is, we are going to depict the worst thing that ever happened to our main character, mm-hmm. and we're gonna depict it, like, visibly. You're gonna see this, and it's hard to, for the rest of the film, to kind of live up to its basis, you know, like, right. you start with you know that she's, I actually thought she was his wife at the very beginning, but whatever. She's clearly very close to him, and to drop a rock on her head and have her bleed out in his lap in the truck covered in mud. It was just like, oh, what is this? Where is this movie going from here? And then the movie, of course, it can't possibly, like, you just can't, right? Mm-hmm, right? There's not enough time to set up what needs to be set up for you to really feel this guy for the rest of the movie. When I said paint by numbers, it's this perfect process. Like someone said, how do we make a disaster movie? I know, let's get out the disaster movie, the D encyclopedia, and look up how, you know what I mean? Like there's nothing in this movie that steps outside of it. Except Ruth is, for some weird reason, this other thing, you know.
It's interesting that this particular director is got such a weird mix. Like, he's got movies that I really respect and love, like The World's Fastest Indian. I love that movie. Species, piece of garbage, but kind of schlocky fun. No Way Out, a really intense psychosexual thriller with Kevin Costner in it from '87. Yeah. Cocktail, the year after that, kind of a shitty Tom Cruise movie. Like, it's kind of all over the place, but a lot more movies than you thought he did. He did all sorts of stuff. The Recruit, The Bank Job is very good. I don't know what all this new stuff is. Some of these things are the November Man. I don't know what that is.
This felt like he was channeling Richard Donner to me. That it felt like a Richard Donner kind of vibe.
Actually, I think that's a good comparison for all his movies. It all feels like Richard Donner movies.
Right.
If you think about
it. And that's a compliment, because that's a really good, I like
those. Yeah, but I actually think this is the weakest of all those, Dante's Peak is. And the reason I think that is because I think the effects are great. I think the both practical, combination of practical and 97 era digital worked really well.
A lot of models. Like, you got to get over the miniature models, because once you do, once you give in, you start feeling like you're seeing mountains and dams breaking and whole lakes spilling and so on. And it's really just, they built it in a room and it's beautiful.
Yeah. God, but some of that stuff was great. Like when you're watching the cars on the highway rocking up and down and falling, I think some of that might have been practical effects. Yeah. A lot of it was models.
I think most
but
of it
man,
was,
it was a great job.
Yeah. I think, you know,
Volcanologist lauded this movie as being fairly accurate.
See, and I didn't know I never knew that that's what they were called. I thought they were just geologists, but then all this name volcanologist getting thrown around in the movie and then hearing it in other places. Right. I guess that's you're a geologist, but your specialty is volcanoes, I guess. Right.
Right. So, right.
Yeah. And I always thought when I would hear volcanologist, I'm like, oh, they're people that know everything about Spock and his origin.
Okay. They also call themselves volcanologists. There's a big fight.
They don't like each other.
WWE versus, you know, the world.
They're like vegans, because you got vegans from the old Marvel villains from that weird planet, and then real vegans. Yeah.
There's a problem. Yeah. Let's talk. I want to talk about Pierce Brosnan just for a second. I think for a while I just loved everything he did. It was just something so comfortable about having him in
To me, he was too fancy for this and not rugged enough, in my opinion.
Oh, right. Really?
Yeah.
Are you too fancy to be kind of action leading man?
Just sort of like, oh, hello, what's up with this deal? Just a little too wavy, a little too thin, a little too British, a little too something. I can't put my finger on it. I would have.
Was it his push-ups that killed you? Was that it? Was
I know you did not like the push-ups.
No, the push-ups were bad, though. Gosh, dang it. That's not good for you, what he was doing. That's very bad for your neck. Yeah. What the hell was that even? I understand.
I like, are you working on your Twitch muscles? I mean, what are you doing there, buddy? You're
exactly. He wants to get partnered, working on his Twitch muscles. But here's the other thing. when his girlfriend in the first sequence, which is an interesting way to start a movie where you have a disaster and then 58 minutes later, another one, right? But in this particular case, she gets that freaking meteor right through the head. And that was hardcore, dude. thought of what that was, and a micro not meteor, but whatever, you know, a molten lava ball going through your truck and then right into the cranium of your girlfriend. That's freaking rough. I mean, maybe I'd do push-ups like that too if that happened. Right.
Can I just say, like,
don't care. I'm going to do the push-ups however I want to.
Whenever we say who could have done it better, you know, and you're right, Pierce Brosnan is a little too soft, or like on the he doesn't have any hard edge.
Yeah.
I always go to, where are they from? Right. He's from Ireland, right? Yeah. And so it's like, okay, so who could have done it better and would have been like a little bit more? I can't find a better word than masculine.
Mm.
And my answer is Liam Neeson. Oh my!
Oh, he would have been great.
Liam Neeson's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm all for these. Sure. I'm all for Liam Neeson being the thing that Liam Neeson is now. I don't have a problem with it at all.
Yeah, right.
Like, it's just fun.
You know, it'd be really easy to say, he just plays the same character over and over again. But you know what? He does it well. I like that character. I'm totally fine with him doing that.
Yeah, and he's very compelling. I believe it every time I see it, even though I know I'm seeing the same performance basically every time.
Yeah. And what are the new set of skills? Okay, good. Yeah. All right, we're awesome.
Yeah, that's, I guess, what I'm saying is I would have gone for, I have no problem with like an older, more distinguished sort of, you know, boring job geologist guy. That's not a problem. I just find Pierce Brosnan to be too, hello. Yes.
If they hadn't already had Sam Neill as Dr. Grant in Jurassic Park.
Oh, he would have been good.
He would have been perfect because that's all we really have here is Mr. Remington still doing his best Sam Neill, right?
Yeah.
Right. We're not looking for, I know how to use a gun. I know how to, you know, pull people out of a burning building kind of action hero. We needed like a, you know, all right, I'm a scientist, but I'm okay swerving around a falling helicopter if I need to.
Exactly.
Right.
By the way, I would like to take back my thing I said earlier. I actually think Jurassic Park 1 might be the best disaster movie ever made. That's a really good movie.
Yeah, this is true. This is true.
It's easy to put it in a different genre, right? Because it's like, oh, well, it's dinosaurs and it's an action adventure and all that. But at the end of the day, that's about that park getting thrown into shit show land and everything breaking.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, we call something a disaster movie when it has the typical tropes, right? Like, it's not necessarily, when I said snakes on a plane, I really mean it. It has all the tropes. It's not actually really much of a disaster movie. I mean, you know, there's snakes on a plane, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the premise.
Sure.
Does it sound like the world blowing up or anything? But they do share a lot in common, all these movies.
I agree. Now, here's the interesting thing. I was looking up the director. His name is Roger Donaldson. If you take a look at his running score on Rotten Tomatoes, and Rotten Tomatoes goes all the way back for your full career. They just go find old reviews and papers and stuff and use them if it's older than the internet. This is his second lowest score of all of his films. He tops out at a 91% for No Way Out, does real well with things like 13 Days and World's Fastest Indian Bank Job. Those all are up in the 80s through hundreds, but a lot of stinkers, and this one is in second place to the worst. The worst being Cocktail has 5% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, wow.
Whatever. Jeez,
no love Bermuda, for the cruise shaking
Bahama,
his dream.
Nope.
Alone gets the soundtrack award, right?
No, no, I think actually you've pinpointed my least favorite thing about Cocktail is that damn Beach Boys song.
I own that album though, and for a summer it was just I don't know. It was
Did the Beach Boys know that Kokomo is landlocked in the middle of Indiana? Do they know that?
Way down in Kokomo.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Is that a thing? I didn't know that.
There's no resort. It's a made up name that sounds beachy.
That's right.
it's also yeah. pretty significant, like representation of how far the Beach Boys had fallen at that point.
Yeah.
You know what? Probably their third most successful song
easily,
ever.
Easily.
Like to think in 1993 they figured out how to regain everything with
oh,
one
you mean, you
idea.
Mean pander? Oh yeah, they figured out
pander,
a pander.
You mean pander. Pander. Yeah, so they're not a pander. They went full. They went full.
Well, they found the hot button issue for Ibbot over here.
Yeah.
Oh, we've written a song that's perfect for soccer moms who know nothing about geography. Awesome. Let's. Yep.
It sounds like they went full Starship at that point. It's all Starship at that point. You know, that's what it reminds
totally
me
was.
Of.
Yes, exactly.
Because when you got an album like Pet Sounds, one of the most influential and amazing albums ever made,
yeah.
and then you end up like that at the end. Exactly. What are you doing, guys? What are you doing? All right. His second, like I said, was this. And this was a market much higher than 5%, 27% for this one. Still not great. That ties, or 26, sorry. 27% went to Seeking Justice. And then it kind of goes up from there. But No Way Out, they say, is the one to get.
Yeah, I would agree. That's a great one. Yeah. Nice twist, too.
Yeah. Had a really good, I'm partial, I think, to 13 Days, which also had Costner in it. That's the one about the Bay of Pigs deal, and it's very good. The Cuban Missile Crisis stuff, it's extremely good, and great actors in that thing, except a really bad Boston accent from Kevin Costner, like terrible. Oh man, you thought his American accent or his English accent in Robin Hood was bad.
In Robin Hood, yeah.
Yeah, I got news for everybody. It's not as bad as that. Despite
so
all that, it's very
up,
good.
When we opened up Dante's Peak, we open up with what's the worst that can happen. So sometimes that happens in movies because they don't trust the audience to understand how much danger these people are going to be in. So we've set the bar and we set it kind of high. They did this in Cliffhanger as well, by the way. You start out with the worst possible thing that could happen, and then you kind of ramp it up through so that you have this great tension. And I actually like that, but I do think there was something going on there with we kept running into the second best, and that's what this town was. Dante's Peak was the second best. Was Linda Hamilton also the second best of Pierce? Was he settling? Was that
no? Yeah.
He really was really driving it home.
I mean, she was the mayor. She was the mayor of the town.
Right.
She also was this. She also owned this cool cafe.
Best
I think
coffee
she was
in town. Apparently, not so much here.
Yeah, oh, she was great.
There you go. Not the second best coffee in town, Brian.
Right.
Right. Not the second best.
Think of her as she's Terminator 2 to Terminator 1. You know, like she's the old girlfriend's Terminator 1. Good enough. Okay. Not bad. Well done. Terminator 2 is like, whoa, this is so much cooler. I really like her a lot. Yeah. I think she's awesome. She bugged me when I was younger because, like, in the Terminator 1 days, her jawbone thing she's got going. So this is like Brian's chin thing. Brian has a thing with, like, weird little pointy chins.
Ibbot, not Brian. Don't
Ibbot.
Yeah, no, I do. Yeah.
So Reese Witherspoon style.
I do have a thing with strong jawlines, too. Like, that can be a little bit of trouble. With her, it doesn't bother me at all.
It's like it looks like she could unhinge her jaw and eat me like I'm the guy.
Like a snake eats a mouse, basically.
Like, I was going to say, like the anaconda eats, what's his name? I can't think of his name. What's his name?
Angelina Jolie's dad.
George's car was owned by him. It's
Oh my God. This is so much fun. No,
my
keep going.
Gosh.
Was he an anaconda? What else did he do?
Yes, he winked when he got coughed out by the snake, remember?
Did he have a child?
Now he's kind of a dick.
Was it Angelina Jolie? Yeah.
Yeah, Angelina Jolie's his dad. His daughter. Right. What is wrong with me? It is, if I can hear George say.
John
Voight!
Voight, there you go!
Holy crap.
Only, you know, for the sake of keeping the show moving.
You know what I can hear in my head?
That was
I heard
navigating down a mountain full of lava.
Here's all I heard in my head was I heard George Wendt in my head constantly when I would try to hear.
I can see that.
And you can then that is not him. Anyway, yes.
Speaking of George Wendt, boy does this movie have poor man's George Wendt. It's kind of hard. Like I'm like, couldn't they just get George Wendt? Why do we have his fraternal twin? Why?
I feel bad that for that guy a little bit, because about 2 months after this, he died of a heart attack.
Yeah,
but it was a pretty young age.
I don't know about the best IMDb photo, by the way, but this guy has the best opening line of his bio on IMDb. It says, Beefy, Philadelphia-born Charles Hallahan was often cast as cops, both good and bad, mainly because the map of Ireland was written all over his face.
Love it.
So the word beefy begins the sentence? Did I hear that?
Yeah,
right?
The first word in his bio is beefy.
Yeah. Too much beef got him in the end, I think.
Oh, Paul.
Yeah. He did die from a heart attack.
He was only 52.
He died from a debris in this movie.
Died from a flipping bridge. And I can't think of any time I've ever laughed at a Wilhelm scream, but I laughed at the Wilhelm scream in this one.
Because it was so poor. That's a very poor use of the Wilhelm scream.
Bad use of the Wilhelm scream.
There should be nothing humorous about that scene at all.
No, Paul is having, like Ruth, having his redemption moment.
His doubting.
Yeah, he's paying for his doubt. And now it's not supposed to end with, so we don't need to hear freaking Goofy falling off the edge of a cliff, you know? It's really weird. I bugged me that they did that, but I recorded it, so we'll play it later. But,
good.
Yeah, good. Still annoying. All right, I wanted to mention I've been to that town up there. It's filmed way up north.
Dante's Peak?
It's not really called that.
The real place, Dante's Peak?
No, I forgot to write down the name, but it's in Idaho, way north up there, and it is that beautiful. It's a gorgeous, beautiful place, and they're all nestled down there in the valley. The only difference is there's not a looming... There's no big giant peak up there. That doesn't exist. That was digitally added to the thing. So, yeah, but it's very nice.
Some of those inner shots were St. Helens, right?
I think so.
That's what they said. Yeah, they used St. Helens footage.
They got some new footage up at Mount St. Helens, it says in the trivia, if that is to be believed. They did go on to say that the volcanic ash it produced was made, which looked pretty convincing, made of fine newspaper shavings. Which got me to thinking, that's not much better than ash. Like, you all are breathing that shit.
You're breathing, right? That's a really good point. That's not something that you want to be sitting there on set inhaling day after day or newspaper shavings. So,
I kept trying to figure, so there's one scene in the film that just hit me in the face like a bunch of ash.
Like a falling helicopter.
Like newspaper ash. There's a scene where Harry is meeting up with Paul at the Vulcan research facility. Yeah. And so they're talking and he's telling him about it. And he says Dante's Peak. And right as he says Dante's Peak, in the background is a sun, the newspaper or the rag mag, the mag that is back there. And it says on it, Satan's face appears in volcanic eruption or something. And so I was like,
really? You noticed that? I didn't notice that.
Oh, really? I didn't notice that either.
Yeah. It was like right in your face. To me, it was anyway. I was like, oh, because I guess I always immediately, anytime I see a newspaper article in a movie that allows me enough time to read it, I'm reading it. I'm assuming it's some kind of,
I usually do too. I'm usually aware of those things because I think it's like they'll usually work really hard to do the headline. But they won't worry about the other stories that are on the front page. And so it's really usually kind of funny, like Earth about to blow up. And then underneath it'll say Dairy Cow wins best at the food festival, something like that.
Yeah, I didn't notice that. And it's a lot. They usually foreshadow a lot of stuff. I guess that kind of did.
And they kind of did a couple of things like that. A little bit of foreshadowing. Like I said, none of it was done to any great effect other than just to create this mood. It really didn't say anything like. You might ask yourself, why is Harry constantly able to get out of, trouble? Is it luck? And then later on, they kind of have him doing some magic tricks and stuff. And I'm like, oh, are they saying that he's kind of like Harry Houdini, more or less? He's more like he just has skills and he's not just lucky. It was some weird character writing that was just that.
Yeah, I think if you're just a good geological dude, I don't know that you have all this. I don't think the bonus skills are there. Maybe all the push-ups did it. I don't know what the hell gave him all those powers.
That's it.
One of my favorite secondary characters was the one who played Stan. And the guy's name is, I don't know if I ever say this right, but Zima, I think is how you say his name.
Zima.
He is.
Yes. Yeah, seriously.
You we've see that Asian
I'm
actor
I'm certain we've
everywhere.
Said this before on Film Sack.
We probably have. He is in a lot of stuff. Stuff we've seen before, but also a lot of things I love, like Man in the High Castle. He plays the general of the Japanese occupying army in that. He's very good.
He was in Arrival.
Oh, right. Right. Love that movie. Yeah, that movie's great. This, Star Wars Resistance does a voice thing.
This
He's very
one
good.
Actor... makes the movie escape from being 100% white, and it's still sad. It's still sad that this movie doesn't know black people exist or Hispanic people exist, et cetera, et cetera. And like this one actor, like they even put Grant Heslov out in front of the camera more than once to try to give you this feeling that it's not just Lily White. And right. It's like, come on, movie. I understand. Like, one of my favorite places in the world is Ouray, Colorado, and I remember going there on vacation once and spending a day just walking around, going to restaurants and stuff. And I never saw anyone who wasn't white. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I kind of get that, but still movie. Come on, movie. You can't have one black guy.
Well, all the extras are from Northern Idaho. And let me tell you a secret about Northern Idaho. No white
little vanilla, little vanilla up there.
They got one flavor, yo. And that's it. Yeah, I just really like that dude, and he's been around forever. He's one of our Star Trek connections, was a TNG dude, was in a lot of like 80s and 90s television, then tons of movies you've seen. I mean, immediately as soon as I saw him, he was on Veep, for heaven's sakes. You just see the guy and you go, oh, that guy, right, he's in a billion things. And I read all the stuff about how he was from Hong Kong and all this, so I expected like a huge list of the movies he did before coming to the States. Nope, it's all stuff here. Just Cocaine Cowboys is his first thing. Went on to do Cosby Show. His fourth credit is the Cosby Show. He's on The Equalizer, LA Law, all that kind of stuff.
By the way, guess what happened on Amazon Prime yesterday?
A new episode of Man in the High Castle dropped, I heard.
Yeah. We got the final season, finally.
Yeah. Well, it's only four seasons, so I wouldn't say finally, but yes. I'm very excited about that.
This is the final season. They've announced this.
No, I know that, but I'm saying it doesn't feel like finally because... In other words, it feels like I don't want it to end is what I'm saying. I want it to keep going.
Yeah.
But in some ways I like that they have had a plan and they said, this is a four
final season, not finally season.
Yes. There you go. That's the distinction I was looking for. It says here, this is the only time Pierce Brosnan and Linda Hamilton worked together, but they are famous friends after this, after they worked on this film.
We're
I guess
both
they're,
famous.
They're pals and they hang out.
Oh,
and,
their friendship is famous, not they're famous and they're also friends.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
The friendship itself is the famous part. They're both famous in their own way, but they like to, send cards to each other and get each other on the phone. And I'm making all this up. I'm just basing it on the...
I imagine if Pierce Brosnan's driving, Linda Hamilton's not saying shotgun. I'll sit in the back seat. Thanks.
By the way, Linda Hamilton trivia, I came into this just convinced that she had like 3 or 4 or 5 ex-husbands. Nope, just two. She's been married
just
twice
at that point, right?
Yeah, she's married to dude before
James Cameron, right?
Cameron came after Terminator. And then the guy before that was a divorce. And then I think that's it. Right? She's just sort of hanging since, or maybe she's still married to the second guy. I don't remember now.
No. She's been married and divorced twice. That's it. I really genuinely believed she'd been married like 4 times. Yeah. Nope.
No. She's on the low end of the spectrum there in Hollywood.
Just
a couple of times. Nobody does the James Stewart thing anymore where it's just one, Nobody's married to the same person forever in Hollywood. Name somebody who has it. You can't do it. It's not possible.
You don't give us a chance to either.
Felicity Huffman and William H. Macy.
Oh, maybe that's true. I don't know. One of them's in jail right now, so I don't know if that's good.
I'm going to go with Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson.
Nope, Tom Hanks is divorced. Tom Hanks had a wife before her, so close. He's on the low end. But
How about Rita Perlman and Danny DeVito?
I mean, that's maybe. Maybe.
Oh, wait. I got you. Will Smith. And his wife, Jada Smith.
Pinkett Smith. That might be one, actually. You know what? You might be right.
It feels like it's at least 20 years. It feels like.
Yeah. And they've had their ups and their downs, but that everyone does. So maybe that's a good one. All right. Ding, ding, ding. You got it.
All right, there you go.
The Fresh Prince of staying married.
And I've confirmed that William H. Macy and Felicity Huffman, neither of them married before they married each other in 1997.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Hey, that was the year after after his Oscar nomination for Fargo.
So you're saying that William Macy is married to an ex-con?
No, a current con.
No, a current con.
Yeah.
Con of current.
That just happened. So, yeah.
Right, but she's out of prison, so she's an ex-con. Oh,
well,
right?
I guess technically.
Is she out? I didn't think she was out.
She's out after her.
She was in prison for hours.
Yeah, it wasn't very long. She was in white person prison, rich white person prison. It wasn't much. But also, but there's some new charges or something she's got to face. I can't remember what the deal is.
Really?
Tied to the same controversy. I don't know. Maybe it's a civil trial thing. I don't know. But anyway, she looked a little frowny last time I saw her.
I just looked it up. She reported to the jail in Dublin, California on October 15th and was released on October 25th. So she was in there 10 days.
10 days.
That's like going on a camp. That's lame.
Yeah.
I mean,
on a deep sea fishing trip with some kids and a woman.
It's like being voted first out of Survivor.
Yeah. Kind of stuff. it kind of is. It sort of is. And you're not eating any, it's even better because you're not eating testicles in there. You're eating like real food.
Are you sure?
I mean, yes and no. Like the Survivor people.
Was it a co-ed prison?
Right. I know. Is that the same? I don't know, man.
I want to argue here because like the Survivor people are all in their 20s and Felicity Huffman is 56. And I mean, you should know as you look forward to being 56, you can only imagine how hard things like, you know, staying in, sleeping on a floor or whatever for 10 straight nights.
I don't know. I don't feel bad enough though, because until they stop putting like someone of color in jail for forgetting to register before they cast a vote and they put him in for 6 months before, when they stop doing that, then I'll feel bad for Felicity Huffman. Until then, boo freaking who.
I just wanted to bring up how old she is because this week was the week that Jennifer Aniston in the real world became older than Wilford Brimley was in Cocoon.
Shut.
Oh, wow. Cocoon.
That is not true, is it?
Yep.
What the? Because he was my age when he was in Cocoon, right? He was 50.
Was he really? He was 50?
I think so, Brian. I think he
was
our age.
I can't imagine a time that Wilford Brimley was not 70. Like,
right.
I don't.
Right. He's just not that. It's a crazy statistic. That's I believe it, but you know, that's what's interesting. Like this dude that Paul, the character in this movie, who sadly died at 54, I guess it was his age. So he'd have been like 52, 53 when they were filming this. He looks 68. Like, you know, it's, you know, that whole thing with 40s, the new, or 50s, the new 40 or whatever. I think there's something to that. There's like some kind of, people are eating better, smoking less. I don't know.
People are not breathing in volcanic ash that looks like a newspaper.
Yeah. His ears went way out, though. Did you notice that? Like the little, he had like Barenthal lobes.
He had volcanic ears?
No, they were like, if he turned his face, this is just something I noticed. I'm a weird, okay, so everybody forgive me or not, but whatever. He would turn his head, swivel it, and on the side where he was turning it, the lobe would lift considerably upon his neck muscles.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Because isn't it, so the attached earlobe is supposed to be an indicator of higher risk for heart disease, right?
Oh,
so,
is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that explains a lot about that guy then. Because he had a thing.
Doesn't explain much.
Yeah. Here's both of my
diabetes.
It might be a clue. By the way, I put that newspaper article picture in the chat. Satan appears in volcanic cloud over New Zealand. I mean, it's like,
oh my god, it's tiny. How did you ever notice this?
It is
the bottom corner of the window. Is that what you're looking at?
Yeah, look at that. Yeah. Look, everyone's eye line, it is in the center of the screen. Everyone's eye line is pointing directly to it. How do you not notice that?
I don't know, but I like the little kid drawings.
Of course, I remember I do watch these on my 100-inch screen projection, whereas you probably watch it on your iPhone. So, I'm just saying,
By the way, hey, Netflix, we've been pimping you for over a decade now. Screw your stupid overlay whenever I pause something.
Yeah. Right.
Let me pause and look at something, Netflix.
Exactly. Instead of you dimming it. Because I can't, it's dimmed so far, I can't see the map of Ireland on Callahan's face.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But see that lobe? If he turned his head real sharp on that image, you'd see it just go.
Flap his ears like that drum device that that Danny, and not Danny, whatever his name was, used in The Karate Kid 2.
Yeah, yes, that's the one. Okay, but also I just wanted to point out, I like the little kid crayon drawings of volcanoes in the back.
Yeah, that's what they got sent in.
I love you, volcanologist.
Yeah, you guys are great. I know what I want to be.
Pierce Brosnan actually drew those.
Oh, shoot. We've outed him as a horrible artist. Oh, well. You know who I really like now, though, is old Pierce Brosnan. I prefer it over this version of him. I like him grizzly and a little salty and gray. I like him a little crusty. I want some movies where he goes the Liam Neeson route and just starts getting revenge on everything. I think his time has come. I
agree. You know whose time didn't never come?
Yeah. What?
Whose time never came?
Who?
Old Terry's spider legs robot. That was the most pointless.
That
was the most pointless thing in the whole movie, other than to deliver us the elf, so that Harry could save everybody in the end.
Yeah.
And our only justification for it is that we have the trope of the jerkass, which is a huge thing in disaster movies. Mm-hmm. And the jerkass in this movie is the helicopter pilot. And if wasn't a jerk. Yes, they would have a taxi right up to where they wanted to go. You know what I mean?
I wanted to make sure I wasn't the only one who was
He hit some Wi-Fi lag, and it made it sound like he went jerk. Yes,
I loved it.
It was great. No, there's nothing wrong
with
that.
But Randy, to your point, please, maybe it's cleared up some.
Yeah,
bring it back.
Yeah. This is a trope. It's in a lot of disaster movies.
Walk towards the light. Again.
Yeah,
walk towards the light, Randy.
Walk towards the light.
Your router.
He was making some really good points.
Walk toward your router. Open your
where.
There you go.
You have a.
Put your left. Oh, we lost him. All right, now he'll be back. He'll be back.
Here, so I think
it's all good. Okay, sorry. So Randy was here, and we were talking about a thing, and I don't remember what it was. Go ahead.
It's a trope called jerkass.
Oh, jerkass.
It's a guy.
Yeah.
It's a guy. It's all.
So much fun.
Back in. All right, we're back, everybody. Technical issues are gone. Now we just deal with the volcanic ash that lays about us.
That is Dante's.
I got a trope for you. Everybody plays pool when they're having a bad time and they can't get their boss to do what they want, so they go and they play pool at night. That's what you do. And maybe that's a real thing. Maybe people really do that. You know,
it is a good stress reliever. I can't tell you the last time I played pool. I even own a pool cue.
Oh, like your own cue, like your bowling.
Yeah.
Ball.
Okay. Here's the deal. So not a very good pool player. But while I was working at that newspaper sales software place, a buddy of mine said, "Hey, you design logos, right?" And I said, "Yes. Could you do me a favor? My friend of mine is starting a company. He's making pool cues. He doesn't have the money to pay you, but if you design a logo for him, then he'll give you a pool cue." Like, oh, cool. All right. Yeah. Total trade-off. Cause I've always wanted a pool cue.
I thought
that might improve my game.
Sure.
So I designed the logo. He gives me a really nice, like, you know, one of those felt, you get a little box and you flip open the box and you pull the two halves and you screw them together. So the following weekend, Tina and I get invited out with some friends to this place called the Boiler Room, and they have pool tables there. And I'm like, oh, I'm totally going to bring my pool cue. We're going to play some pool. Now, we've never played with these guys before. We had met them through a friend, but we'd been hanging out together. And they say, "Oh, you want to play some pool?" I'm like, "Yeah, cool." And I pull out my this case, and I take out the two halves of the pool cue, and I screw them together. And the look on their faces is like, oh, crap.
This guy does pool.
Tina and I proceeded to have the best game of pool in our lives.
Wow.
That's great.
Purely, I don't know if we had just psyched ourselves up, if we psyched them out, but we were playing really well. Like, we were seeking every shot that we were aiming for. And it wasn't the cue, because we like played a week later and we totally sucked like we always do. But there was something about that first time. And the guy afterwards, you know, after we had told him, we just actually got this pool cue and we're really normally horrible players. The guy says, "When we saw you pull that thing out, like, it, we both just, our hearts sank. Like, oh crap, we're playing against a total shark here."
Yeah, he's a pro. Yeah, I think that's really funny, and there probably is something to that. You know, there's something about
the
bravado of it.
Yeah, you guys are like, the placebo effect of, oh, I've got a good cue, I must be a good player.
Yeah, that's like when people put on a fake wiener, they feel pretty good. It's like,
Is are we talking Marky Mark again?
That's the same. You open up your little felt box with your fake penis in there, and you, ooh, and everybody goes, oh, what is that?
Yeah. Screw the two halves together.
Yeah, the whole table is your oyster at that point. That's amazing. Right. Well, anyway, in movies, though, it's like, my boss won't listen to me. I'm going to play pool tonight.
Well, and Harry was apparently replying that he was pretty good, except when Linda Hamilton distracted him with her flirty looks, right? And then he's like, oh, messed it up. I'm out, guys. You guys have fun. I'm going to go do grown-up work.
Yep, that's true. Randy, you strike me as a guy who, for some reason in my head, I have it that if you wandered into a pool hall or a bar with a good pool table, that you might dominate the pool table. You'd be good at it.
And I think it's because I've told you the story, the facts of my childhood, which is when I was about 5, my parents bought and installed a pool table, and it took up a huge chunk of the house. And then I spent the following 15 years able to practice pool as much as I wanted, whenever I wanted. My brother was 15 when the pool table was acquired, and so it didn't give him the same sort of output, but. So I went to college, and at the student union, there were a bunch of pool tables and big signs that said no gambling, and everyone ignored those signs. Mm, right. And yeah, I came in with like, I was like the guy who could shoot an arrow down the other guy's arrow in the bullseye. And it was kind of like cool, but at the same time, don't get a pool table for your house. That becomes a table. The idea my parents had was that, you know, they had kids, they had boys, and their boys' friends were going to come over and play. And never once in 10 or 12 years of growing up as a kid did I ever have friends over and they played pool. Never once.
Yeah. We had pool tables a couple of times in my life in different houses, and usually they came with the houses. It was like, okay, we're going to buy the house. And it's like, well, we got this pool table here. We'll just throw it in.
Yeah, they don't want to move it. Nobody wants to move it.
No, they don't.
They're like hot tubs. Nobody wants to pick up their old hot tub and take it with them to the next place.
No. We bought a air hockey table from Costco when they were on sale, and we assembled in the basement, and then we decided, oh, my God, we don't want this thing anymore. How are we going to get it out? And really, I just said, I'm just going to take the Sawzall, and I'm just going to cut it into pieces. We're going to take it out that way.
Goodbye.
So after, you know, four or five years of this thing, at first, for the first few months, being an air hockey table that we played and had fun with, and then occasionally an air hockey table, and then just a table.
Place to fold clothes.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
And it was like, well, I was building my poker table, and we just want to get that thing out of the way. And we get so much more use out of the poker table as a poker table because we play, you know, board games and stuff on there. But the air hockey table, you can only use it as an air hockey table because if you can't put chairs along the side of it, it's too deep.
Air hockey.
Mm-hmm. The air hockey table. Like you can't use it as another kind of table because it's.
Is that what happened to your hair? You just dry it in the air hockey table and it just
it just fell off.
Yeah, that's a good warning.
Is that the story here? The moral of the story.
Yeah, that's the moral. Yeah. It's always the moral. But here's the thing. I really do believe if you're gonna have a pool table, the best thing to do is be somebody who has a room that is dedicated to the pool table.
A game room. Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't have that, you're asking for trouble. You're gonna lay everything on it. The sticks are gonna break. Yes. Kids are gonna tear up the carpet. What's it called?
It doesn't take much
to
mess up a pool table either, man.
Felt? What is the stuff that you tear by?
The felt.
Is it felt? Yeah. All that stuff screwed. Your balls are gonna get lost. You're gonna be like, where's the striped six?
Where's the triangle?
Never lost any pool balls. And only ever had one set the entire time that pool table was in my mom's house. After she sold it eventually, and you know, it's one of those things where you sell it for like, if you give me $15 and you move
you
the
haul
damn
it out.
Thing,
yeah, right.
Well, you can have it. Like it was just like, you know, it never really got. For me, it never gave me this like sense of that exceptional extra sport stuff, you know, like, so when you get into bowling, at some point you cross a line where you go get a custom ball and bags and you have your own shoes and so on. And I never once felt that for pool. Like for me, pool was this thing where you didn't need a custom stick, or you would, if you were getting custom sticks, would be a set, right? Mm-hmm. Or you know, like guys who show up at the pool hall with their own balls. No, I never once thought that was like something you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. But it was really amazing to me when I was 19, I went to college and I started playing against other, you know, college kids, and I found out, oh, whoa, I'm really good at this compared to them. Like really good.
Mm-hmm.
Do people really show up at pool halls with their own balls?
Oh
weird. Yeah. When like there's places where the pool hall or the pool table doesn't have a set, you need to bring your own balls.
Wow. Really? A whole set of balls? That's a lot of balls to carry around.
Those things are heavy too.
It's just a little bit. It's less than a bowling ball would weigh, you know?
Yeah. That's crazy.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So in movies, this movie gave, speaking of things like that, this movie gave the Harry a smoky quartz that he gave to the kid. Is that right? Is that my remembering that right?
Yeah. He gave her the smoky quartz, which was a weird. Actually, there's a lot of things I question in this movie because I don't know that the science, like the robot thing seemed real fishy. And also, does water really, is that acid thing real? I don't know.
Yes and no.
Okay.
So there is an actual acid lake, or there have been actual acid lakes that have been created by volcanic activity. Mm-hmm. The acid being that concentrated in that big a body of water is movie fiction.
Yeah, that's the part I was like, okay, did a whole bunch of xenomorphs from the Alien movies die in here, and they're just. That's how we got like that was too quick, too fast.
Well, maybe she's just allergic to acid. Maybe she takes a stronger reaction than others.
Who, grandma did? So did the boat?
Maybe her pH balance is off just a little bit.
She's a baby Ruth, that lady.
Yeah.
For instance, the one I just looked one up, there was a lake in 96 that was on top of an earthquake, and the earthquake caused all kinds of acidic material to get into the water, and the pH in the water went from 7.5 to 3.2.
Yeah.
And you might go, oh wow, what a change. Now 3.2 is like grapefruit juice.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be in solid grapefruit juice for a long time, that will damage you.
Mm-hmm. Ow, I have a scratch on my leg that's kind of tingling now. Shoot.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a paper cut and lemon juice sort of thing. Sure.
Unless it's on your mouth. Woo.
Ooh, boy. Yeah.
That'll wake you up.
You get in the lake of acid with a cold sore, you're in trouble.
Whatever, a volcanologist, pool man.
Yeah, that was a little too much for me.
Yeah.
And then, but honestly, like all of the destruction and the quakes and the explosions and the ripping the town to pieces, actually all that stuff was fine. You know, A, it's good for your disaster movie, but B, it seemed reasonable to expect a lot of fallout from an eruption.
Let me tell you something about the science. I would like to I wish we could watch Volcano. It's not streaming anywhere, but the Tommy Lee Jones movie Volcano is about a unknown volcano that's under LA, and it reveals itself with earthquakes and then lava seeping up out of the ground. And there is a part in that movie where a man is got another man, he's carrying him on his shoulders, and he has to walk through lava and throw the guy because the guy's out. Uh-huh. And he literally melts like the Wicked Witch into the lava, and it is just like
I want to see Volcano. That should be on a list whenever it pops. We should be watching that,
right?
Because that was that same year, right? We had a duel.
They were same year. So I think.
So it's like
came out early that year.
It's like Armageddon and Deep Impact. It's that whole thing. Yeah, I'd love that. We always should watch both of those whenever we can.
Right. I look for it. I could have rented it, but I was like, am I really that dedicated? I said, we'll wait.
I love Volcano. It's not true that there is any sort of volcanic activity underneath Los Angeles. The La Brea tar pits are a pressure formation, right? So there is some sort of deep pressure that's forcing a little tiny bit of asphalt to come up to the surface in this one spot.
Yeah.
But I love the idea that somebody writing that movie was like thinking about that and thought, you know what? That's a volcano. I'm making that a volcano.
Spoiler alert. This is how they stop the lava flow. They put water on it. They put up a barricade.
They don't actually stop it. They don't stop the lava flow.
You're right.
It just evaporates, right? Just
no, they eventually control it. They eventually get it into the Los Angeles River so it can flow to the ocean.
And the LA River isn't really a river, right? It's the thing the Terminator drives through and shoots.
Yep.
Okay. All right. That's awesome. And the other thing that bugged me is you would never name your dog Ruffy. That's a shit name.
What's we're going to name a dog? Ruff, ruff. Okay, Ruffy. Ruffy. Looks good.
Yeah. What do you call your cat? Meowie?
The dog picked his own name.
Yeah. Yeah, the dog picked it. But it's like saying Meowie or, you know, it's shitty. It's shitty name. Don't do that.
I really was worried when I found out they had a dog named Ruffy and an owner named Ruth that there was going to be some kind of stupid dog joke like, Ruth. Ruffy. I was waiting for something like that. Where's the lava at? On the roof.
On the roof.
The scariest part of this whole movie was when the lava just all of a sudden bust into the house, in Ruth's house, like the back wall. It was like, I don't know why that startled me so much, but it was just like they were having a conversation. Normal conversation.
There's no way that would work. The heat would have long gotten there and started that all on fire before the lava ever reached there.
Definitely would have noticed. You definitely would have noticed when lava is outside your wall.
Yeah, that's not out there like a freaking ninja waiting to pounce. It's right. Like,
right.
Doesn't really work that way.
Wait for it.
Go.
You just reminded me of some advice that I feel like every couple of years we need to make sure we remind the world. Don't name your pets names that are currently popular for actual human babies. It's like good advice, but I think a lot of people need to hear it. Like for a long time, for many, many, many years, the baby names for girls have been Emma and Olivia and Ava and Isabella and Sophia, and every baby girl being born that are human are being given those names. Don't name the dog Ava, please. Thank you.
All right. No dog named Ava.
Don't name it Alexa or Siri.
Yeah, either of those things. Good point. Oh, that's great. Yeah. Oh, two things just went off in my house, Brian. Thanks. Just kidding.
Sorry.
Not really. I have headphones on. I did think of you, though, when that truck bit happened and he got stuck in there and was trying to push the button and everything was caving in on him. And I kept thinking, who's the person I think is kind of claustrophobic, and your name came up in my head.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That would have got me too.
That's funny. That scene didn't bother me as much as some scenes like that, because it was more like he got in there and it just kind of started crushing. It's when you crawl into an area like that.
Oh, right. Yeah. You knowingly go into a small. Yes, yeah, yeah. I'm same. Yeah. Like every time you see one of those videos or GIFs of somebody going into doing cave diving or they're snorkeling and they decide to go through a really narrow coral tunnel.
Jeez,
I can't stand underwater stuff. That's the worst. If you get too far in a place where there's no place to go back up for air, I'm like, can't watch it.
Do you find yourself instinctively holding your breath when a character in a movie dives into water?
Yeah, a little bit. Absolutely. A little bit. Yeah. I breathe in when when they jump, and then I kind of hold it for a second, and then I realize, oh, I'm not Paul Walker. I can breathe just fine. Everything's fine here. Or whatever. What was that movie? Deep Blue Butthole?
Deep Blue Sea.
Deep Blue Sea. No.
Jessica Alba's butt.
Yeah, that was a Deep Blue Butt. And then I also was pissed about this because you know what your NASA button's supposed to do. How long has that been blinking? About 3 days.
Oh, yeah.
You dipshits.
A couple of days.
Okay, then they get out there and they should all be dead if they had no source of food, certainly no source of water. If they ate the dog, maybe, but the dog's just happy and coming out of there just as excited as they are. And they all just walk out, do-do-do-do-do, we all made it. I didn't buy that for a freaking second. You would all be emaciated messes. You'd be barely alive with no water down there.
There were so many Chekhov's objects in this movie. There was Chekhov's transmitter that got kicked off of the spider robot. There was Chekhov's... freaking cave. Like when they go to the cave and they find the kids and the kids come out, I'm like, oh, someone's going back in that cave. I had no doubt.
There was a tour during the movie about 45 minutes in or so that was just like, let's tour the town and show you all the hot spots and all the objects we're gonna use and see later.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
Here's this place my son's screwing around with his friends in. I'll bet we come back here to get I didn't even say this at the top of the show. I thought I'd seen this movie. I'd never seen it. I thought I had, but I haven't.
Lucky?
Yeah. So for me, it wasn't even me remembering that the mine played a role. I just immediately knew when they pulled the kid out of the mine. I'm like, they're back in the mine at some point. They're going in there.
This movie never asked you to use your brain. That's the thing. It's like, I don't want you to use your brain. Just sit down.
Yeah. You know what? I feel like some movies should be better at telling you that so that you don't get mad at the movie for being dumb. Because if they just said, the following film is meant for you to shut off your brain. Please enjoy.
Right.
Then maybe at least you go.
Please turn off your cell phone and your brain.
And
now.
Your brain. Yeah.
The following film is presented with limited brain engagement by Gillette.
Perfect.
And like we talked about some of these action sequences that are so stupid, like the boat on the acid lake. Mm-hmm. But I'm here to tell you, driving a truck over a lava flow. And they really did that. Like they had fire under an actual truck that I'm assuming stunt people were inside the actual truck. But it's just like, wow, I was impressed. This movie went for it. They didn't make that up at all. They just did it.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. And they were proud to do it.
They were proud to do it. And man, I just couldn't help but think it every time. Pierce Brosnan, he would get in a vehicle. I'm like, oh, that vehicle's toast. He's going to use that vehicle to the very last drop.
Mm-hmm.
And starting with the first scene.
Yep.
Yeah. The whole movie.
Man, that tire
just murders cars.
That tire that was on fire. Holy shit. All I can think of is, you're not going to go anywhere, dude. What are you doing?
Yeah. Right.
Get what out was of the most car. Intense,
did anybody have like a most intense moment? Like Row, Row, Row Your Boat played really big on me back in the day when I first saw this. I was like, oh my God, how are they going to get out of this acid lake? But this time around I was, the intensity of that, was it a Buick or something? Or it was some kind of large mid-80s kind of car that was coming towards their snorkel truck and knocked them. And for some reason, that was like freaking me out. That was like such an intense moment.
Yeah, that was
Snorkel truck was a Chevy Suburban, and that freaking thing could swim. That was amazing.
Yeah,
I didn't know they made a Suburban that could swim.
I didn't know there was a snorkel vent thing for your engine in any sort of car. And also, why would he have that? He's not studying that.
Some Jeeps have that. I feel like I've seen that on
Jeeps. It's a thing.
I've never heard of that before.
Anything where you need the intake to be above the level of the river you're going to drive across.
Right. And then the other car hitting them turned out to be a good thing because then it pushed them out of the way.
That Oldsmobile 88 Cutlass, what was it? I don't know. It was a big car and it was just like, it was coming straight at you. And they filmed it like above and below the water and it was just.
It's something my Uncle Joel would drive. It's a big old boat of a 70s piece of shit. And whoever was driving it, they're not getting out. They're done.
No. Well, you already said that. I can't believe they're following me. They don't have snorkels.
Oh.
Those fools.
Those idiots. Yeah, he really had it for those guys. All right, I have sound clips of this film that I have gathered throughout the film. Here's the thing. I think the score is pretty good, but I wanted to mention in this first clip how I think the score sounds like Fallout music. And if you're familiar with the Fallout games at all, they all have a consistent theme, and then they kind of riff on that theme throughout the Fallout games, especially the new ones. And I swear this sounds like a Fallout game. So anybody out there who plays a lot of Fallout, they'll know what I'm talking about. Here you go. That is the Fallout riff, like 100%, and it's all throughout this movie. And it's good, don't get me wrong. It's a good score. It's one of the strongest parts of the movie, in my opinion. But it's just reminded me of Fallout the whole time it was playing.
They had a weird thing with the soundtrack, too, I was reading about, because I was looking to pick up the soundtrack, and they really didn't have one until the DVD Blu-ray release, I believe.
Oh yeah.
And then they had the full thing. I don't know what was going on with the music, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. You know who loves this movie is Tom Merritt. He likes all disaster movies. He just loves them. Yeah. Doesn't care if they're dumb or not. He's just all in.
He liked 2012?
He loved 2012.
With Woody Harrelson standing on that hill yelling at the explosion.
Loved it.
That was awesome.
Loved that movie, he said. I did not. I thought that movie sucked.
We still, I know the plan is that, he's going to be our first ever guest on this show when we do 2012. He's going to actually join us on Film Science.
Yeah. And we've been saying it since
Very
2012.
Last episode.
Yeah. We've been saying it since 2012. So we're getting down to the wire. Yeah. We were all in our 30s then or something. All right. Here's the say the name. Oh, they say the name of the movie a lot in the movie, but I captured the first time. So here it is.
I'm sorry I had to drag you in like this, Harry, but we are picking up some activity around Dante's Peak.
This is a joke, right?
And then the rest of the movie, Dante's Peak just gets said constantly.
Dante's Peak is my nemesis. Dante's Peak killed my girlfriend.
Yep. Dante's Peak. Welcome to Dante's Peak. I am the mayor of Dante's Peak. Dante's Peak.
Whoa. The second most desirable place in the world, including me.
Yeah. You're right about that.
You just made me real.
Oh, no. Oh, no. He's going down again.
It sounds like he's drunk.
He's going down. Going down, Randy.
The Coxby Communication Service.
Oh, you're back.
If the Earth is the
he's going out. I just hear the F is getting drawn way out, if you know what I'm saying. I want to hear.
What, am I not coming through clearly?
No, not at all. I wish it wasn't so funny. I'd feel worse.
I know. It's so funny.
Sounding
the sounds that it's making, Randy, are truly the lemonade that's coming from these lemons. And I wish you could appreciate the sounds.
Yeah,
that are,
if you go back and listen to the show, I'm keeping some of it in. But yeah, Cox is apparently cocking up the internet today.
All right, maybe you're clear now. You were saying about the Earth. If the Earth is
round.
If the Earth is a single villain, right?
Uh-huh.
Where every volcano is kind of connected, right? Then Dante's Peak is just the most recent gun that the villain is firing at our protagonist here, right?
It's the new weapon, right?
So that's just a really weird way to think about it, is that this guy isn't working to fight this new volcano, but just another version of the same thing.
Gotcha.
The many levels of Dante's inferno of hell, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they talk about all the different volcanoes that he is the opposite. He's always trying to save everybody.
He's been to them all. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is a good theory.
Here's I like this guy. He's the hotel guy.
Some piece of crap town out in Montana.
He just really discounting the
crap town.
Got first.
Dude, the
place.
One thing I wrote in my notes that I was wishing you recorded as far as clips was on Pierce Brosnan's answering machine when he's doing his push-ups and the guy says, "Are you there? Are you there? Yeah. Harry, are you sure you're not there?"
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. Now that you phrase it that way, I guess I'm not sure that I'm not there.
I guess I'm not here.
Right.
Let's see.
And that's a thing that these future generations will never know. There's no answer machine sitting somewhere. Yeah.
Where you're listening to the message being left as it's being left.
Yes. Right. Oh, I mean, there is. Oh, that's a good point, because we still have voicemail.
I would love
to
have that feature on a phone, though. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah, I would like that. Just be able to tune in and go, oh, it's my mom and I don't want to talk to her right now. I
guess you could kind of simulate that just by having a soundboard that says, "Hi, you've reached Brian."
Oh, that's a great idea.
And then you could just listen to it then.
Or just say it. You don't have to have a soundboard. Just say it. Say, "Hi, you've reached Scott's phone. I'm not available right now."
Yeah, but you can tell when somebody's making that.
Yeah. "You've reached movie phone."
Yeah. Why don't you just tell me that movie? All right, here is, this is Ruth getting kind of saucy. Here you go.
"Sometimes couples sneak up here for a hot dip and some hot nookie."
Some hot nookie?
Come on, Grandma.
Hot nookie? I don't like how she
says
that.
That's what happens when you're teenagers and you're making the love in a horror or a disaster film. Mm-hmm. You're doomed.
You get punished. You get punished for having sex in a horror film.
You're right.
That's right.
"And some hot nookie."
It's a hot nookie.
Nookie.
Nookie. Yeah,
she
nookie.
Makes it sound so sexy, Ruth, baby.
"We did it all
I don't
for
know,
the cookie.
But I would not sign up for my butt floating up there on top of the water with the bubbles all over top of it."
Oh,
that
I know.
Rough.
Yeah,
that was rough.
I saw nudity because I was like, I don't remember nudity in this film beginning. And I'm like, oh.
A little
that's
bit.
That's the extent of it.
Yeah. You just get burned butt. That's
butt.
It.
Burned butt.
Yeah.
Burn
and you butt. Get, and you get,
nobody
the,
wants
as
to
the
see
girls
that.
Getting into the water, you can, you know, they can't keep cutting the camera right before too much flesh is about to flop into scene or whatever, but.
Flop into scene.
Yeah. That implies that, you know, she's got sloppy boobs.
Yeah. Floppy, sloppy boobs.
Flopping around.
Floppy, sloppy hole. All right. Here's
two different takes on the same idea.
Yep. Here is the confusion a lot of people have about volcanoes that are dormant. They think this is the case.
I thought this was supposed to be an extinct volcano.
Yeah, extinct. Come on, dude.
I thought this was supposed to be a...
That he is Lying. That guy in every Lying. Movie he's in, by the way. He's always some sheriff who's just like, yes. I thought we were told there wasn't supposed to be a bear, but like there's that dude is that in everything he's in. And he's
I
a
thought
lot.
We killed them damn huge snakes.
Yep. He's pretty great. All right. Here's the here's some foreshadowing.
Yeah, just like Pompeii.
It's like Pompeii up there.
Nothing like Pompeii.
There's so many times this movie says something for your benefit, viewer, because you're dumb and you don't know what they're talking about.
Right, yep, right, yep.
Like, there's a moment, I don't know if you captured it, and I'm sorry if I'm preempting it, but there's a moment where Linda Hamilton literally says, acid eats through metal. Yeah, like, now, what? Who is this movie for?
that struck me as weird. I'm like, yeah, it eats through lots of things. What's your point?
Yeah, why are you telling us that? It does assume the audience is stupid, and I don't always love that. All right, here's a spill and a scream, and this is pretty good, so check it out.
What's good here?
Everything's good here.
Everything's good but her pouring coffee.
Everything's good but my aim.
Yep. That coffee is hot as lava.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Right? Ooh. We'll see. Let's just see. Why don't you put your hand in that coffee and put your hand in the lava, and we'll just see.
Yeah. Here's some good advice here as well.
Never keep your beans in the freezer.
Never keep your beans Hello. In the freezer.
Uh-huh. Everybody knows that.
Yeah. Don't put your beans Shrinkage. In there. let's see.
Two Seinfeld story. References today.
Yeah, nice job. Nice job indeed. Here is
up about 20 times a day, really.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. Here's some fish for mom.
Mom, fish.
Mom, fish. All right. It was kind of loud.
Boy, and boy, do they have to spend a lot of time, everybody looking at the dead fish floating. Oh, like
so much.
Yeah.
Like everybody has to stop and they have to cut. The camera goes, let's look at Pierce Brosnan's face. Now let's look at the dead fish. Let's look at Linda Hamilton's face. Now she's looking at the dead fish.
You know what's the worst song to sing right now? Oh, dear Jesus. We're all gonna die.
Wheels on the bus go round and round.
Round and round. Why didn't they sing that in Speed?
Why didn't they do? Why do they just not sing? Just what are they thinking?
Yeah.
All right. Here's
you know
the
what lifts the spirits. Scary song.
Yeah, does it? Here's the Wilhelm scream that Paul made. It's kind of loud because there's like a roaring river and stuff going on, but you can hear it. So here it is. You hear that?
Oh, yeah. Boy, did
he's
I hear
like,
it.
He's just somberly looking at the people back on shore. No, no, Paul. Oh, no, you're going to die. And then the thing flips and he's,
Yep. It's really dumb.
Bad right. use of Wilhelm.
And I wanted to punch this guy.
How long's this light been blinking? I don't know. Day or two?
Dude. I'm so annoyed by that Dude. Light.
Yeah.
You had it for a reason. You know what it means when it blinks.
There's no way I'd have a flashing red light in my equipment and not go, what is this?
A couple days. All
right. And then my least favorite thing anyone said was this.
Thank you, NASA. Thank you, NASA. Thank you, NASA. Thank you, NASA.
Okay.
I can't believe that was a thing and you didn't capture coffee.
I know.
Java.
And also, that was the beginning of the trope in the film that killed it for me. And I don't ever want to watch this movie again. And that's the swell ending.
Yeah.
It starts swelling at that point, and it just gets more and more swollen until you're at a moment at the very end of the movie where a bunch of strangers are literally applauding the principal actors, like standing around. Like it's like the end of Star Wars or something.
Right.
And it's just like, it's so bad. Like,
Good job living.
Oh, it seriously murders the movie.
And like, I didn't capture this either, but the girl tells them as they emerge out in the ashes, it's like we didn't hear him say this.
Thank you, NASA.
All right. So it's like we missed all that, she thinks, because she pulls Pierce Brosnan and goes, you know what? When we found the light and knew you were alive, we kept saying, thank you, NASA. Thank you, NASA. I'm like, yeah, no, we heard you did. We heard it.
We were there.
You
we
rancid were. Horse pucky. We
this movie.
And Randy's right. It's swole, man, at the end. Yeah. Too much. Yeah.
But you know what? I'm going to watch it again.
No, you're not.
And I'm going to watch it again.
No, you're not.
And again, is this one of those movies that it works for me.
I think I'm good for a long time. Maybe with friends or something down the road, I could see it again. But I want to watch Volcano pretty bad, though. Because aren't we all, I mean, other than Dunaway, aren't we all kind of in agreement that Volcano was pretty good? Now, I've seen both now. I still think I like Volcano
y'all
more.
Think it was good?
I love that movie.
Interesting.
Love it. Okay, well, then see. Yeah. Let's get it. Let's get
it. Well, in the scores, the reviews reflect this opinion. I am just a contrarian, apparently, but I just didn't. I just couldn't. Like I said, I feel like Dante's Peak told me right away, go ahead and turn your brain off. Have a good time. Yeah. Volcano said, don't turn your brain off just yet. And then it said, yeah, you should have turned your brain off.
I love that. I love the movie was like, should have totally turned your brain off. You dumbass. Can't believe you sat here and watched all this and like actually thought with your brain. All right, here's this now. It's the Film Sack Checklist. Lake Alien Blood? Check. Here, Grandma, have my crystal? Check. And finally, the dam could have used some Remington steel reinforcement.
To bond it together?
Uh-huh. Yeah. You like that? But yeah.
I want to go back to your crystal moment because Grandma couldn't stop being a B-word all the way to the end. Just take the crystal.
Yeah, the little kid is offering. This is a moment of cathartic. The kid is going through some serious stuff here.
Yeah.
Take her crystal. Come on.
Yeah. The kid needs you to take the crystal more than she needs the crystal.
She went on to do a bunch of other stuff. She's much older now. She's born in 87. She is
not grandma. No,
the girl, the kid. The grandma died, I think.
God, hard living.
Oh, you know what? She's still alive, that lady, Ruth.
Oh, really? Ruth?
Elizabeth Hoffman. She was born in 1927. What does that make her?
Old.
Well, she's definitely old.
93.
All you gotta do is subtract. This is a really quick one. Yes,
yeah, that's
not,
an easy one.
Not too bad. The math on that one.
She's 93 years old, still out there. Mm-hmm. But the girl was in some things. I'm not saying you should go seek this out, but it always weirds me out when a kid actor goes on to do booby stuff in a movie.
Right.
And I don't. It makes me feel
uncomfortable. Is this movie called Booby Stuff?
No.
Because I would watch a movie called Booby Stuff.
You would. It would be
not,
like.
Not for the porn. I just want to know. What is Booby Stuff?
Yeah. It's something called. I forgot what it was. But she was in something where her boobers are out. And it's. I don't know. It just weirds me out. I feel like. I don't know. It just doesn't.
It's true. It's because you still remember that child.
Yeah. I remember as a kid. And as a kid, it's like.
They never age, but then suddenly they do in your head.
So. It's like finding out that kid from Christmas Story got his tongue stuck to the pole, finding out he's like a hardcore porn guy now.
Right.
Right.
I don't want to know that. Like,
what else does he get his tongue stuck to?
What other poles?
Wow.
I don't like it.
You'll shoot your eye out.
I don't like it. Oh, there are too many good references in that movie.
There really are, yeah.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas. All right, we got a track connection here. A lot of them, actually. Walker Brandt played Marianne. She played Cadet Jean Hajar in the fifth episode of First Duty on TNG. Zima, we talked about. He was Stan in TNG, played a biomolecular specialist in the second season episode, Samaritan Snare. That's the Packlet episode.
Oh, yeah. Make it go.
Make it go. We are not smart. Justin Williams, see the Packlets would love Dante's Peak because they never think, so they'd be good. They'd be all set. Justin Williams played a paramedic. He played crewman Jarvin in the episode Parallax on Voyager. Elizabeth Hoffman, old lady Ruth, she played Premier Bravinani in the episode The Price on TNG.
Bravinani.
That's where I recommend. That's where I remember seeing her face as TNG. Brian Hedy, he was Les Worrell on Enterprise, played Dr. T-Mac on an episode called The Communicator. And finally,
have just said anything right there. Those two names.
None of that. Could have said anything. Jibber Jabber Juber. Yeah, that sounds right.
good connection.
Bill Bolender, he was Sheriff Turner. I thought this thing was an extinct volcano. That guy. Mm-hmm. He was on DS9, played an albino in the episode. I'm sorry. Yeah, an albino in the second season episode, Blood Oath. So there you go. I didn't know we had an albino in that show. Like if all pink with white eyes or all white with pink eyes or whatever. However that works. All right. Soundtrack grade, I give it a DP for darn. I was trying to have, I can't think of anything. It was good. It was fine. Yeah, it was very Fallout-y, but it was fine. It was very good. All right. Twitter posts is where we sum it up in 2019. 280 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
Dante's Peak, a place where naked lovers have sex in natural hot tubs. The new guy in town is guaranteed to get laid as soon as the hot lady can get him back to her place and hot coffee later. Just like a Saturday night at Evan's house.
Yeah.
Hot coffee. Awesome.
Nice. Thought we were going there. Brian Dunaway.
Dante's peekaboo, like a frog in boiling water who is too stubborn to get out of the water, Ruth. Your legs are boiling.
Yeah. Nice job, Ruth. Oh, I forgot to say, quick interlude.
Get up here and grab a bucket.
It's the kid Graham's friends. They're the chicks in the bucket. The two that were in the mine with him. They were there, and then they were gone.
Well, they didn't stop talking. Yeah, they did. And I wish they would have stopped talking about the ex-husband, because it's like, why are you giving us anything if you're not going to reveal anything? You just keep saying,
he's just
real shit.
Exactly. So he couldn't even be a chick in the bucket because he never showed up in the first place, never got in the bucket.
He was like the sauce that you was waiting for the bucket and never came.
Right. Nice. Nicely done.
I wondered what ends up transpiring for a jerkface helicopter pilot and the rich dude trope who he saves and gets out of town. Like, did they just fly all the way to the Bahamas? Like, what did they do?
Yeah,
I want to know.
Why wouldn't they? Just keep going. That guy was a wiener. Blake from Blake Enterprises or whatever dumb thing that was.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
That's a great name, Scott. You got to write that down. That's
Blake
a good
from
one.
Blake Enterprises. What do you do? I don't know. Blake. Anyway, Brian Ibbett.
Whew, God, I thought we'd never get to me. Dante, this is 275 characters. I measured it out. Dante's Peak, a movie where an erupting volcano has a deep impact on a town and makes it look like Armageddon. To the mountain, the townspeople all look like ants living a bug's life, but like they say, it doesn't take a real genius to see that seismology is a weird science.
Nice. Real genius and weird science.
You only left out the Prestige and the Illusionist.
Oh, there were several that I wanted to work in there, like Father Like Son and 18 Again and Big.
What was the big? Yeah.
Which
was
one
the
is your
big?
Favorite out of there? Father Like Son's probably my favorite.
Oh, Big. Come on. Big is everybody's favorite. And you're lying if you say it's
I didn't
not.
Hear you say Big. I didn't hear you say
Big. Yeah, Big is good. There's
but
nothing
out of
wrong
the,
with Big.
Out of the secondary ones of those, yeah, like Father Like Son. That's the one with Judge Reinhold and Wonder Years kid. Yeah. Fred Savage.
Fred Savage.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the lesser.
When I think of mountain town movies, for some reason, what comes to mind first is Roxanne.
Oh, yeah, that's in a mountain town.
You need to rewatch Roxanne.
I like Roxanne.
That one feels like it's in Breckenridge or Vail or one of these when these ski mountain towns.
I was a huge fan of that movie. I love
it. Oh, yeah. No, it's sweet. It's charming. And
it's great. It's when we knew Steve Martin for sure. We were 100% sure at that point that he could do stuff that wasn't just,
wild and crazy guys.
Yeah, yeah,
like the jerk.
Shithead dog.
He hates these cans.
Yeah. The jerk, by the way, does not hold up very well. It's
a lot of questionable content.
Well,
here.
It's not just that. It's just not good. It's kind of not funny. I don't know. It's maybe worth us watching. We'll have to see. Might be one of those comedies worth breaking apart and sacking. Hey, check this out. Oh my gosh. This just handed to me. Late breaking news. This movie was almost titled three different movie titles. Okay.
Whoa.
Almost three of these. I know. One was Dante's Leak. I don't really get it, but Dante's Leak. That was a thing.
The mountain leaked.
Yeah.
Lava.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's probably why it was leaking lava. Yeah. Or I'll Be Broke Back Mountain. You know, because they lose everything. They're going to be broke, Or, this is my favorite, Grandma is on Acid. And that's what they almost used.
That's the best of the three titles.
It's pretty good. We got an email here from a listener. This is from Bernie Walter, who writes in all the time. He says this: do I have to convince you anymore? Steven Seagal dies 15 minutes into executive decision, and the audience applauded in the theater. I saw this in the theater, and that happened. Go ahead, bump something. When else are we going to have this opportunity? Please check it, says Bernie. Bernie, I've got good news for you.
Right.
Next week, we are doing Executive Decision.
That's right. Stuart Baird, a highly underrated director and editor, directs Kurt Russell, Halle Berry, John Leguizamo, Oliver Platt. What a movie.
Yep. Leguizamo, if I remember right. Oh, I might be thinking of someone else. I'm thinking of somebody in The Rock. Never mind. I won't spoil it. Leguizamo, I do think, dies, though. But anyway, yeah, it's a...
Spoil The Rock. It's totally fine.
Yeah, it's fine. But Steven Seagal's early death was the thing that everybody talked about this movie. That was, like, the number one thing, because he was, like, first in the credits, first on the poster, great big version of his face on all of the materials for promotion, and yet he dies in, like, 10 minutes in. And it's weird. So... we're going to finally watch it. It's finally streaming, and we're not putting it off any longer. So, Bernie, calm yourself down. Keep your typing fingers in flexible shape. Everything's fine now. Don't have to worry about us. We're doing we've made an executive decision, and we're doing it next week.
Oh, look at that. We've done it.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. It's been decided. So, that's happening next week right here on FilmSack. In the meantime, go to filmsack.com. Enjoy things there, because there's all the old episodes and all that stuff. So if you're looking for all the things we've always done, you can always find it there, filmsack.com. You can also leave us voicemails at 801-471-0462. That email address, again, is filmsack@gmail.com. And you can find us on Twitter at filmsack. Leave us reviews where you get your podcast, too. That is always helpful. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Thank you, NASA.
We'll see you next time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Lava flow.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.